coming up on New York Now.
If we don't get it, shut it down! If we don't get it, shut it down! If we don't get it,
shut it down!
Advocates descend upon Albany in the final days before the budget deadline. We'll examine where the governor and legislators stand.
Sources have told me over the past few days, I reported this earlier this week as well, that there will most likely be a monetary component still in bail reform. That doesn't mean that there will still be cash bail altogether. So what they want to do is they want to eliminate cash bail for low-level offenses like misdemeanors, nonviolent felonies.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. The budget bills have started rolling out.
Indeed. Before we get into where negotiations are as of this taping, let's look back at some of the issues that took center stage inside the Capitol. Should New York State ban plastic bags? It's a question that's been asked before, but it's gained more traction in 2019. The environmental group Riverkeeper, along with several lawmakers, made their case at the Capitol.
Anyone who knows me knows I schlep a lot of bags around. So when I go to Zabar's and other places, they give me 5 cents back because I brought my own bag. I know that is true of so many New Yorkers. We don't need plastic bags. It's a convenience whose time has come and gone.
I go to many elementary schools every year, sometimes more than 10. And when I ask kids, regardless of whether it's a religious school, a public school, in a wealthy area, in an area that is people of lesser means, all the children give the same answer when I say, if you could be in Albany and be the governor one day, what's the one thing you would do? And they all say, do something about the pollution, do something about the plastic. And they're 8, 9, 10 years old, and it's the number one thing universally, 99.9% of the time they say.
Another hot topic has been the possible legalization of recreational marijuana. We examined this last week in our feature story. A large group of supporters crowded the hallways of the Capitol on Wednesday and even temporarily blocked the rear entrance into the assembly. The chamber's majority leader, Buffalo's Crystal Peoples Stokes, addressed the crowd in the afternoon.
I understand the negative impacts that criminalizing this plant has had on black and brown communities.
Yes.
Tell you, I'm not the one that advocates for anything that goes in your lungs, but I know that people do, and I don't think that they should be criminalized if they do.
Yes!
It's from the earth.
Nobody's criminalized for smoking cigarettes. Nobody's criminalized for having a dirty martini. Nobody's criminalized for having a Budweiser. Nobody's criminalized for being able to make beer at home, wine at home.
Right.
And so I don't think anybody should be criminalized for using this plant.
Save ourselves! Save ourselves!
Hundreds of members of the Be Fair to Direct Care campaign crowded the second floor Monday. The nonprofits that support people with developmental disabilities are asking that workers get a living wage and a cost of living adjustment. Several lawmakers spoke, as did the governor's counsel, Alfonso David.
2 years ago, we raised the minimum wage for workers throughout the state. And one of the collateral consequences was that it had an impact on direct care workers. And the salaries of direct care workers have not increased proportional to what they should have.
That's right.
A few years ago, we raised the salaries and wages for direct care workers. And I'm here today to announce that the governor has made a decision that he will not pass a budget without increasing the wages for direct care workers.
Opponents of a proposal in the governor's budget that would put a tax on opioid prescriptions drew lawmakers, physicians, and those who suffer from chronic pain, like Julie Farrar, who worries her medical bills will rise if the measure goes through.
I live with chronic severe pain from spinal stenosis, degenerative disc disease, arthritis, and shoulder impingement disorder. And opioids are one of the tools that allowed me to get my life back. I really couldn't tell you when my pain was originally diagnosed how horrible it was for me. I was truly suffering, and I was very grateful that I had children, actually, because I couldn't wrap my mind around living in that degree of pain for the rest of my life. It simply was not sustainable. And through the responsible prescribing and use of opioids, I got my life back. I was able to parent again. I was able to work again. I was able to become a contributing member of society again. And this tax does nothing but punish people who are trying to live their lives. It is misguided and will cause more problems than it could potentially ever solve.
A few weeks ago, we heard from organizations that were against the expansion of the prevailing wage to any project, public or private, that gets state funding, saying the proposal would increase construction costs and hurt business, particularly upstate. This week, we hear from the other side, including Rochester Assemblyman Harry Bronson, who responded to the arguments against the wage boosts.
Those same people said don't pay a minimum wage to our workers because it's going to destroy our economy. Well, we've been increasing in upstate the minimum wage, 70 cents for the last few years. We're going to evaluate that at the end of, I think, 2021. And I don't hear them say how that has destroyed our economy at this time. And the reason it doesn't is very simple, because when you pay workers better wages, then they go and they stimulate the economy. And as every economist talks about, two-thirds of our economy is through consumer spending.
And finally, Thursday in the war room, a group made one final push to hold the governor and lawmakers accountable on promises to implement a form of public financing for elections. Andrew Cuomo inserted a small donor matching proposal in his executive budget that has support in the Senate. But as Speaker Carl Hasty told us a few weeks ago, many members of his assembly conference have trouble supporting it.
All three leaders right now have a responsibility to New Yorkers to finally clean this place up, clean the cloud away, and reinvigorate it with small donors first. And we don't even have to figure out every single detail in this budget, but we need clear statute in law that creates a small donor matching fund system. The time has come. The responsibility lays at all three: Andrew Cuomo, Andre Stewart-Cousins, and Carl Hasty.
This week's New York Now poll question asks, do you support a statewide ban on plastic bags? Let us know what you think at nynow.org. Last time around, we asked, are you in favor of legalizing adult-use marijuana? A lot of votes on this one. 58% said yes. Stephen in Rochester, watching on WXXI, said, claims about marijuana being a gateway drug or being addictive are bogus. This stuff has been researched exhaustively. It is probably the safest of recreational drugs, far safer than alcohol. Diane in Tupper Lake, watching on Mountain Lake PBS, said, I know a lot of people who've smoked pot for decades, and none of us go further to other drugs. It needs to be legalized. And finally, Bill in Saratoga voted no, saying, it seems to be just asking for trouble. I don't want to have to worry about high drivers as well as drunks when I'm on the road. Our thanks to all those who took the time to vote. We hope to hear from you again at nynow.org. It's where you can find all of our past programs and links to us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PBS. There's also a link to the excellent Capital Confidential blog, all the granular details about what's in and what's out of the budget. You can also access it by heading over to timesunion.com. And that'll do it for me. My partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, will take us the rest of the way.
All right. You know what bleary-eyed, budget-weary reporters love to do after a late night at the Capitol? They love to come over here to WMHT and offer analysis at the Reporters Roundtable, and I'm happy to have them here. Dan Clark from the New York Law Journal, Josefa Velasquez from The City, which is the publication, not the city, and Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio. Thanks so much for coming in. We preface this by noting, as I just did, that this is Friday morning. There is still a great deal of play. We have seen a couple of budget bills that have rolled out at this point, but the vast majority of specific budget language has yet to be seen. So with that preface, here's what we know based on some of the subjects that we just saw in the headline rundown. It would appear that the end of single-use plastic bags in New York State is behind us.
That's right. Starting next March, you're not going to be able to get them in the grocery store. Some localities are going to be able to opt in with a 5% fee on paper bags as a means of not having everybody just switch over and use a bunch of paper, to kind of train people so that they'll bring their own bags to the grocery store. So I don't know if it's going to be a big change or not. Some stores do that already, but for some people, let's say, it will be a big change.
And then out of that, I think it's 3 cents that goes to the state and then 2 cents goes to the county or something like that. The revenue is split between the county and state, so counties will get some revenue from it.
Some of it might go to an environmental fund. I don't know if that's all settled. It was late last night, I have to admit.
Yeah.
The details may be fuzzy at this point.
Apparently in the package will be the controversial opioid tax, surcharge on opioids that passed last year, but that measure was struck down by a judge who concluded that because the original tax would have prevented the pharmaceutical companies from passing the cost along to consumers, this opioid tax, controversially, says it's perfectly okay for those companies to pass the cost along.
Right. The judge actually said in that ruling last year, I remember covering it, that this was unconstitutional because if you can't pass the cost down to consumers in New York, then those companies may pass that cost down to consumers outside of New York. So the judge was basically saying lawmakers in New York can't increase the cost of something for people outside of the state. So that's why they had to change it this year to try to, if they are going to pass it, assuming they are in the budget, it'll be constitutional, hopefully not struck down on the other provisions that the judge identified.
I think it means, sadly, that consumers are going to have to pay. There are people who do need opioids, who have chronic pain, who aren't necessarily addicted to them, and are going to have to, you know, buy quite a few of them, and the cost will be passed down to them. So, you know, I don't know if it's really the best tax you could do.
One thing that is left out, the legalization of adult-use recreational marijuana is not going to be in there. Senator Dianne Savino says that she doesn't think it's going to make it in the rest of the legislative session either.
And I think that, you know, the budget is a sort of inflection point where you can have members take tough issues and all vote on it under the guise of, well, it's a state spending plan. And marijuana is a really thorny subject. It's not just legalizing marijuana use for adults. It's also trying to deal with the criminal justice aspect of it. How do you seal or whether you expunge records for people that have marijuana possession charges? What happens to those who are in jail already because of that? So it's, and then there's the issue of, well, how do we tax it? Which is why I think we're having this conversation, is we want to be able to get the tax revenue from a legalized program. And we're seeing in New Jersey, a Democratic legislature couldn't get it done.
It just was defeated. It could not make it to the floor.
And also, who's going to be allowed to sell it? Who's going to distribute it? Who's going to grow it? There's a huge number of unanswered questions. But yeah, I agree. It might be harder for them as a standalone bill. If you put it in the budget, they can say, well, I'm not really for that, but, you know, here's what else you got in the budget. We got school aid for you. And, you know, some of the more vulnerable New Democrats in Long Island might have a hard time passing this.
And next year is an election year.
Yeah.
If all the tough votes need to sort of happen this year, so it gives everyone cover by the time 2020 rolls around and they're all running for re-election again. So there is sort of a clock ticking. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's necessarily completely off the table for the remaining.
But it's given time for opponents to galvanize, as we saw in this show last week. Law enforcement, the PTA, the school boards are saying, hey, wait a minute, is this such a good idea? Think about it a little.
Speaking of Democrats on Long Island, Todd Kominsky had a very real concern about road safety, which might not be, you know, the hottest issue that has to do with marijuana, but there are real questions about if somebody smokes marijuana or uses marijuana in some way, how do you enforce that on the road? How do you keep the road safe?
Because if you're on Long Island, you drive. You drive a lot, you know, upstate too, really.
Well, but there have been all kinds of questions raised by law enforcement about who's going to, for example, pay for the training to educate, you know, sheriff's deputies or local cops
on how they can tell if somebody is driving while drugged on recreational marijuana.
Yeah, so. There's just too much to decide by March 31st, really, is what it came down to, I think.
Dan, you've been paying attention, special attention, to criminal justice reform.
My whole life.
Yeah, as the negotiation has gone on. So where do things stand now? And I guess we can start with the issue of cash bail, which the governor wanted to see ended altogether.
Right. So sources have told me over the past few days, I reported this earlier this week as well, that there will most likely be a monetary component still in bail reform. That doesn't mean that there will still be cash bail altogether. So what they want to do is they want to eliminate cash bail for low-level offenses like misdemeanors, nonviolent felonies. Then they want to have a separate section for cash bail. These crimes or charges, I should say, would have cash bail. And then there's a third bucket that would say, you're not eligible for bail, you're not eligible for anything else, we're going to remand you, we're going to have you pre-trial incarcerated. So that's what they're trying to decide right now. There may also be a due process provision in there to try to see if they can go in front of a judge to see if they can get out of pretrial incarceration after being placed in there after a number of days. That was included in a bill last year in the Assembly. Mm-hmm. May be included this year again, but it may be kicked out as well.
So is that really ending cash bail?
No.
Then? No. I mean, here's the thing. If you have two people and they're both charged with a violent crime and one person, say, I don't know, a celebrity in New York City is charged with this crime, they can get out of jail, whereas this low-income person in New York City cannot get out of jail. It's still a system for two people on two different levels.
And it also seems very Cuomonian. I mean, we have free college tuition, asterisk, for certain people, 70% of whom, 70% of those who applied were rejected, a $15 minimum wage, asterisk, not actually $15 for everyone in the state.
Right.
And now we're going to have, and cash bail, asterisk. Not for everyone. So it makes for a flashy headline, but at the end of the day, does it end cash bail in New York? No. And New York would be one of the first to do so. California has done it. New Jersey is doing it also. And there have been growing pains with it. In New Jersey, they realize we need a ton of money to do pretrial services.
Right.
We need money for mental health funding, and how do we make sure that everyone is monitored correctly. In California, they're leaving it up to the judges to be able to decide whether or not someone should be incarcerated pre-trial. And advocates initially were really hopeful for this bill, and then they said, hold on, we might have more people in jail because of this.
Yeah, a lot of these items have been around for years, but this is the first year they're actually seriously thinking about what are the implications, and some of it's a surprise, like, oh, yeah, could have unintended consequences.
One thing that potentially could have significant unintended consequences for the media is a provision that, once again, as of Friday morning, is included in the budget package that would allow for police to conceal arrest records, including mugshots. The concern here is that there are apparently unscrupulous companies that are essentially shaking people down by offering to take their, putting up their mugshots and then taking money to take them down. But this seems like using a sledgehammer to go after a mosquito. And the New York News Publishers Association, along with the NYCLU, are vocal in their opposition to it, and it is being rushed to passage, even as we speak.
And the Associated Press Board as well. But I can see the point when they're exploiting these mugshots. You know, what are you going to do? It's on a website. You can't get it off. You have to pay the money. But, yeah, it's hard to find the right solution to this, I think.
And the speaker was asked about this yesterday, and it seems that he wasn't aware of this proposal. It didn't rise to the leader's level. And it was just sort of tucked into a budget bill last night. And it is, like you said, a sledgehammer. I mean, this could have broad-ranging implications for how we do our jobs, but also, you know, what is available for the public.
My paper, the Times Union, editorialized that it's the kind of thing that you see in countries that do secret arrests in the middle of the night. So,
right.
Well, yeah, and I didn't want to say, but, you know, there are a lot of politicians that have been arrested in recent years. You know,
yes.
Maybe they don't want those pictures
out there.
Those
are usually federal
there.
Charges, and we don't get mugshots on
those
anyway.
Well, that's true, yeah.
I do want to spend the rest of the time we have on this remarkable episode at the Capitol in which the New York Times did a story about a fundraiser that the governor held about 2 weeks ago, kind of secretly, speaking of secret things. $25,000 was, I believe, the minimum ask for the guests who showed up. The New York Times, this had been written about in the New York Post before, but the Times had photos of the guest list, and they were able to kind of track what many of the people on the guest list were looking for from the governor.
That's right. The reporter, David Goodman, he tried to get into the reception. He wasn't allowed, but he took a quick picture of the list of all the name tags that they had out there and then started contacting them one by one and got a pretty full picture of, you know, what happened at that reception.
When this story appeared online on Wednesday, it prompted a quite remarkable impromptu press conference from three young female progressive lawmakers. And Giuseppe, you were there and saw it.
Yeah, it was a very impromptu press conference. It happened sort of at the end of the day where two state senators who defeated members of the IDC, Jessica Ramos and Alessandra Biaggi, along with Assemblywoman Yulene New, gathered reporters outside in the hallway and said, you know, a $25,000 fundraiser around budget season is a sort of preposterously high number, and that it was a sort of rallying call for having public campaign finance and possibly having a blackout period for fundraising in and around the budget. But it was a little hypocritical. I mean, they've all had fundraisers in and around this time of the budget, maybe not in Albany, but in their districts. And that same day, an assembly member just down the street from the Capitol had a fundraiser in the middle of the day at a bar. But as this press conference was happening, Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins walks through the hallway, and she's completely blindsided by it and says, "What's happening here?"
The stars aligned.
And yeah. It was a great moment.
Yeah, they stirred the pot, and they really took Cuomo on. They said he was a hypocrite because he says he's for public campaign finance, yet he has this $25,000 plate fundraiser right in the middle of the budget. But as Josepha said, the Senate Democratic Campaign Committee is planning on having a $25,000 plate fundraiser in April. So it's nuanced, and two of the women there had their own fundraisers for $2,500 and $250, which is somewhat less money. So, you know, everybody is participating in this thing, and they kind of admitted that their older colleagues were saying, look, you got to play this game. You're going to be happy later that we have these campaign finance rules because you'll be able to rake in a lot of money and get reelected. And they were saying, well, no, we got elected to change this.
So this prompted this kind of pot calling kettle
black.
If that
weren't enough.
Prompted a remarkable reaction from Rich Azzopardi, who is a longtime spokesperson for the governor. I believe his current title is communications director.
No,
he's a senior advisor.
Yes.
That's
mm-hmm.
right. He just got a promotion, mm-hmm. and he came to the legislative correspondence room and called those three young female progressive lawmakers hypocrites and idiots, and preceded both of those words with a seven-letter gerundial adjective that we cannot say on the air. And you were there, Giuseppe, for one of those.
Yes. I mean, let's just say the word rhymes with ducking.
Yeah.
But it was one of those rare occasions where he has come to the press room. Usually he sort of stays on the second floor, just hangs out in the hallway, but he was in the physical press room and he was really angry. I mean, he spoke to me and a colleague of yours, Karen Fred-Mogul, and called them blanking hypocrites. And it was one of those moments where we were like, whoa, are you sure? And
Sorry to step on your line there. Yes. And then he went into the part of the press room that I was, and he was asked again, can we quote you on saying, you know, effing idiots? And I expected him to say, no, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that. He was like, yes, you can. So that was pretty stunning. And we kept expecting them to walk it back, take it back, but they kind of doubled down on it and said, look,
absolutely,
we'd say that about anyone that we disagreed with, which I don't know if that's the best defense. Everybody's an idiot who disagrees
with you. Off the record, you know, you hear that kind of language off the record. You hear it from lawmakers and Flacks and you name it up and down the line. But for the governor's aide to say that boldly on the record, that is crossing a line that I've never seen before.
Yeah, that's why I really thought that he would step back and kind of come to his senses, because we knew that he was really angry and say, no, that's not really what I meant. And so that created, you know, a second day of a storm where the governor's people just really doubled down on it on Twitter. They were trolling reporters. They were trying to say Alessandra Biaggi is a liar because she initially said she hadn't had any fundraisers, but she meant that she didn't have any in Albany. Yeah. She had one in New York City, and they just kept it going and didn't back down, which is pretty extraordinary.
Once again, we are talking Friday morning, so perhaps by the time this airs, Rich as a Party has perhaps issued a tweet and made a couple of calls to apologize, but
we'll
as
see.
Of yet, no. And with each hour that goes by, I think the administration loses a little moral high ground there. So with that bit of commentary, I would like to thank our exhausted reporters for coming in. Dan Clark from the New York Law Journal, Josefa Velasquez from The City. What's that website, Josefa?
TheCity.nyc.
Check it out. Good stuff. And Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio. Karen, the jacket, what are you rebelling against?
What do you got?
All right. That's it for us this week. We hope you have enjoyed this budget negotiation season. We certainly have. For my partner, Matt Ryan, and everyone else here at WMHC, thanks very much for watching. Have a great week.